Well, hello again, everybody. It is another three-day holiday weekend. It's a market holiday, official end of summer, if you will, here in the U.S., three-day holiday weekend for Labor Day. And since it's a three-day weekend, as you know, if you've been around here for a while, we have a somewhat of a tradition that we post some audio with our good friend Jim Willie, the Golden Jackass himself. He is, of course, the editor of the Hat Trick Letter, which is found at goldenjackass.com, one of the few subscription services that we recommend to you because, man, if there's ever a time for thinking outside the box, it's now. And Jim has been a good friend of the site. Oh, hell's bells, Jim. I think we first met back in 2011, so we've been going at this for a while. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing just dandy, and I'm looking forward to the football season.
Oh, shoot, me too.
This Saturday night, Alabama, Florida State. What a nice way to kick off. Okay, let's go.
You're not going to be watching Nebraska, Arkansas State like I am?
Okay, let's go.
All right, anyway, let's dive right in. When we last spoke, the last holiday weekend was over the 4th of July. That was about 60 days ago. And the primary focus of that call was the events going on in the Middle East, threats to the petrodollar. We had this weird skirmish going on between Qatar and Saudi Arabia and the Iranians and Syria and all this jazz. And the infrastructure that seemed to be being laid, especially by the Chinese, as a direct threat to the petrodollar system. And I think everybody listening knows how important that is to maintaining the dollar as reserve currency and everything else. Jim, I know you got some thoughts about events that have taken place since. So at this point, I'll just be quiet and let you pick it up and run with it.
Okay. To begin with, I expected the Saudis to back off with Qatar because they're pussies. Okay? They're criminals, they're lazy, and they're pussies. And they're losing their U.S. backing. Since when is Saudi going to attack Qatar when there's a CENTCOM U.S. military center there in Qatar?
Right.
Okay, so they backed off because they're pussies. They're war criminals and they're pussies.
We got that part.
Okay, you got that. Fine. Okay, they are pussies. That is for sure.
Are they? Now, are they pussies, Jim?
They're wimp-ass pussies.
All right, fair enough.
Okay, so the Saudis are now in deep financial trouble because of the lower oil price and their costly Yemen war. So enter into the room China. And we've got this fraudulent Aramco stock deal where they claim it's worth $2 trillion and they want to sell a 5% stake for $100 billion to China. I think China will pay the $100 billion. They will lie and say it's 5% when in the fine print of the contract works, it'll be 25% because it's worth five times less as the Western energy analysts have estimated. The Saudis are lying on their oil reserve. All right, what does that mean? Combine that with the other big contracts they're more like bilateral trade agreements between China and Saudi. It has to do with petrochemicals, energy, mining, nuclear energy, and other things. Okay, China is also going to invest in a RMB-denominated bond, a panda bond, that the Saudis are going to come up with. What does it all mean? Well, it means a whole lot more RMB are going to swirl around inside the Saudi economy and government coffers. Well, what does that mean? A very big consequence, Craig. I think the Chinese are going to use this Aramco deal that I mentioned a couple months ago and a month ago. They're going to use it as leverage to buy Saudi oil in RMB terms and not in treasury bills, not in dollars. It's going to be a very powerful, if not fatal, blow to the petrodollar. And as this happens, the Saudi neighbors are going to look to do the same. Qatar is already doing significant RMB-based trade with China. Look for Kuwait, Bahrain, Oman, and others to do the same. Then look for the Asians to say, generally, we're reducing our treasury bond exposure due to whatever reasons they wish to put out. And we're going to buy more RMB bonds because they're our neighbors. And we also would like to use RMB to buy crude oil. And you're going to get the entire Mideast Asian connection out of the dollar for oil. I think it's going to be a fatal blow, and it's going to set the tone for the Eurasian trade zone and their connection with the Persian Gulf. Then add in Iran, which has got something like 100 million barrels of oil that is soon to hit or already hit or in the process of hitting the market. So the oil price is going to continue to stay below 50, and the Eurasian trade zone is going to have a major plank put on of RMB oil sales. That is powerful, Craig.
Jim, let me ask you a question real quick. So I'm sitting there thinking while you're talking. This Aramco investment in the Panda Bond, like you said, is a major infusion of RMB into Saudi Arabia. And so it definitely seems as if one or the other would then happen, right? What you just talked about, this extension of RMB power and pricing power and relationship with the Middle East, which would be RMB positive and dollar negative, as we're talking about. What about a second possibility of the Saudis still playing ball in the system and selling their RMB and converting them to dollars, which would have, a stealth impact in a sense of weakening or revaluing the yuan RMB versus the dollar?
I think that the Saudis are in far more desperate shape. They're going to need the cash. They're going to need the hard cash to cover their deficits and their war costs. There's another side to this, Craig, that fits in like a dovetail.
Okay.
And that is Russia is working out all kinds of deals. They have Venezuela signed up. They have Saudi Arabia signed up. They have Iran signed up, and they're moving to sign up Mexico. The Russians are buying oil from them with contracts through Rosneft. This is Russia, the number one global oil producer, is buying oil. Now, when I first got wind of this about, I don't know, close to a year ago, I started asking questions. Oh, wait a minute, they must have an ulterior motive because they're a producer.
Right.
Okay, Venezuela's got major problems with heavy crude and contaminants. The viscosity is way too high. They lack the liquidity, cash, to buy Nigerian sweet crude oil to mix it with their heavy crude in order to sell it in the open market. And now they've got Russia coming in as a white on the white horse saying, we'll buy yours, we'll manage that mixture problem. Okay, so now the Saudis are going to be receiving some RMB in a big volume from China. They're going to be receiving some ruble or maybe transferred other RMB through Russia as Russia buys Saudi oil. And the Saudis are going to be in a position to say, hey, get off our backs, Washington. We're not dealing with abandoning the dollar. We're just forced into accepting RMB from China because they're investing in our economy and financing our deficit. And we're not selling in RMB to Russia. Russia is doing that. So Russia, through what I call their oil consortium, is going to create a giant pool of oil supply that they will manage the mixtures for, they will manage the contaminant levels, they'll manage everything like that, and they'll sell it outside the dollar and take all the heat away from Venezuela, Saudi, and Iran. Hmm. Now, Venezuela is a different kind of story. I mentioned their thick oil, but they also used to supply 13% of the U.S. imports. And the dumbass American analysts are saying, oh, we screwed them. No, they're going to still get income. They're going to be selling it to Russia. They're going to be receiving either rubles or RMB. I don't know, maybe a combination. A lot of the debt in Venezuela is now structured in RMB terms because China owns a good deal of it. So interest payments are going to be needed to be paid in RMB and to Russia giving them RMB. U.S. just cut Venezuela out of the Americas and shoved them into the Eurasian trade zone. The impetus, though, the biggest impetus and major point is that Russia is creating an oil consortium to replace the vacuum of the OPEC. And this oil consortium, which doesn't have a name yet, I'm just calling it the Russian Oil Consortium, it's going to sell oil in non-dollar terms. I don't know. They're not saying exactly how they're going to be selling their oil and accepting payments. But given the sanctions, I guarantee you, Russia ain't going to be selling in dollars. I'll be watching the St. Pete oil futures contract, St. Petersburg. So we got a lot of moving parts here, and they're all becoming vital gear work for the Eurasian trade zone in non-dollar. This is how the death of the petrodollar is shaping up, Craig.
I'm thinking about what you mentioned about Venezuela, too, and their role, and the almost out of the blue announcement, what, maybe 2 weeks ago from Trump? About, well, you know, we might have to send a military down there. I mean, it caught everybody off guard.
What, to encounter the Chinese military?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and it seems the U.S. military is in retreat around the globe, but all of a sudden we're talking about, you know, we're going to send them here, we're going to send them there. But I thought, isn't that an interesting, I mean, because it seemed so out of the blue that all of a sudden the U.S. decided it had some vital national interest in Venezuela. Well, maybe there you go.
If you ask 10 major nations around the world, do you believe that threat or was it empty? I think all 10 would say it's empty. Okay, let's move on here.
Well, let's get back then. Let's get back then to this idea of pricing energy in something other than dollars and what the trickle down impact of that will be to all dollar holders, dollar strength. I mean, U.S. citizens and the whole global financial system.
I think what we're going to see very soon is an admission by the U.S. government that if the other half of the world here, the globe, it's easier to call it globe because you don't have to include, you know, extraterrestrials and other solar systems. The other half of the Earth globe, namely the Eurasian forming trade zone, they're not focusing on dollar trade or dollar banking or dollar funding of projects or anything like that. So I think the U.S. government is going to say soon, if you in Eurasia want to go ahead with non-dollar functions with banking and trade and projects, economy, go ahead. Go ahead. Have a good time. And they're going to poo-poo it and say that it's not going to go anywhere and they're going to be exactly wrong again like they have been on every single foreign policy statement, objective, and initiative since 9/11. I say since 9/11 because that's when the fascist business model came in. That's when the U.S. and U.K. and Israeli fascist axis of power came in. And that's when all the stupidity and overstretched aggression militarily came in. And all of it has been a failure. Every single one of their policies, every single nation has been a failure. You name the country, I'll point out the failure. So I think they're going to say, essentially, without using my words, go ahead, let's establish on planet Earth a dual universe system of US dollar and RMB. That's what I think is coming. And it's going to lead to a great increase and acceleration in RMB trade payments. And they're under 10% now globally. Mm-hmm. And it's going to bring about an increase in RMB-based banking reserves. And that also is under 10% now. But if you just look at the Eurasian half of the globe, and by Europe in Eurasia, I really mean, you know, Turkey, Bulgaria, not Poland yet, Hungary. The Soviet bloc is a little bit divided, and they're leaning toward the Russian camp,
right,
which is the Eurasian trade zone. So what you're going to get, you asked about the dollar platforms and global platforms. What you're going to see is an increase in the strength, durability, usage, and future viability of the non-dollar platforms. And I lump them together because some of them will be ruble-based. You're going to see Germany and Russia engage in more euro and ruble trade.
Yeah.
In defiance of the sanctions, where they basically say, F you, we're going to deal with our own survival, if you don't mind, Washington.
Right.
The Chinese and Russians are already using RMB. And I've heard, this is from Sky Crane, that's the name he wants to use. He's a very smart guy in my jackass group of colleagues. He said to me a couple weeks ago at lunch, he lives out here, he said that the Russian-Chinese Holy Grail pipeline network system, it began construction in earnest in 2015, and it's now 80% done. All of it has been paid for by Chinese-held U.S. Treasury bonds. Okay, so the Russian-Chinese energy trade starts with the pipelines funded by Treasury bonds, and the flow will be managed in terms of RMB payments, some of which the Russians will take to Shanghai to convert to gold. So when you talk about the Eurasian trade zone and the nucleus with the belt, I call it, from Russia to China, it is ruble, RMB, and gold. Okay, I think the rest, Iran has already established their oil for gold trade with India, where India was supplied its gold from Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Turkey is going to be a member of this. The failed coup attempt was another foreign policy blunder by the United States. And Turkey has been step by step, moving toward the Eurasian trade zone. We've got giant nuclear plants in Turkey to be done by Rosatom from Russia. We have very big energy storage facilities for natural gas to be done also by Russia. And we have the pipeline, Turkish Stream, that has now been moving with some decent progress and commitments with funding. And all the pipes were temporarily put in Bulgaria, a neighbor to Turkey, and they're all being shipped down to Turkey for a post-haste project. That's going to be very important for linking up the Iranian gas. Okay, so what I think is emerging here is a beltline, Craig, among Berlin, Germany, Moscow, Russia, Beijing, China, and Tehran, Iran.
Mm-hmm.
That is four corners. I did not mention India because they're kind of a bitch to the London bankers,
yeah,
proving that they have very small spine.
Yeah.
I don't even wish to talk about India except that they got massive gold demand and they're trying to go cashless. They're trying to convert the temple gold.
Right.
I don't think any of their initiatives are going to have staying power. Look for them to bend. I mean, they're even trying to do London boys are trying to do a war with India and China now.
Right.
How ridiculous is that?
It's like they're still at bended knee in front of the crown, as if it's still 1947.
It's more like bended knee in front of the queen or the king or whatever prince is there to dangle his unit out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So we've got four corners that are becoming rather firmly established for a table in Germany, Russia, China, and Iran for the Eurasian trade zone. And India can join and be integrated piece by piece when they develop a spine. Okay. This is very important stuff.
Right.
For considering that the dollar is losing its luster, especially in the Eastern Hemisphere. And the Eastern Hemisphere is where most of the commodities and finished products come from because it includes a few emerging market nations. They're going to put pressure on the United States, Craig, where they say, look, if you want ships to hit the U.S. ports carrying whatever from the Eastern Hemisphere, we don't want your treasury bonds anymore.
You're going to have to play ball.
Right.
Jim,
a different game.
Let me ask you this. We've watched, and you and I have talked about this now, like I said, for 6 or 7 years, and we've watched this infrastructure be gradually put in place, at a somewhat increasing pace since 2008. I've always thought that maybe in some sense that caught them by surprise, and they thought when the system finally collapses for good, we're not going to be holding the bag. So they're laying all this stuff out there, and they've been working on it for 8 or 9 years now. This is ultimately my question for you. Is there a defining moment where a switch is flipped in a sense, or does it just continue gradually? I mean, could it be something like, we've been reading about this, the Shanghai Futures Exchange rolling out a yuan-denominated crude oil contract and how that keeps getting put off. And then they say, well, maybe we're going to do it. And then it's going to be this date. And then it gets put off again. Could something like that be the catalyst to really accelerate the process? Or is there a catalyst, or does it just continue to remain gradual until the next financial crisis?
Look at it in terms of what the US and UK have strength in. It's rigging financial markets. It's converting a gold market into a charade of paper.
Yeah.
COMEX, LBMA, Forex, treasury bonds, they're all rigged. That's the U.S. strength. And, you can call it a joke if you wish. And I don't think you would, but others could. When I say that if foreigners don't like the U.S. foreign policy, the U.S. government's policy toward them, then tough shit will bomb the hell out of you.
Yeah.
And we'll call you terrorists. It's getting pretty hard now to swallow the claim that Iran is a terrorist nation. They're an emerging Persian empire reawakening, and they want nothing to do with the dollar.
Yeah, they're looking out for their own interests.
Right. Some of the cash payments for the Iran nuclear deal done by Obama, kept in secrecy, was euro currency payment in the billions, cash. Mm-hmm. That's how much animosity Iran has for the dollar. They've been slapped with sanctions after sanctions, and it's harmed them. Okay, you asked, is there a switch? What I'm making a point that the U.S. controls the financial markets, the bonds, the gold market for pricing. So don't expect the event to happen in those platforms. But it's a little different with the Shanghai and Hong Kong actual physical delivery on gold futures contracts, where the Shanghai market has RMB denominated contracts and Hong Kong has both RMB and the dollar. So, we've been talking about arbitrage, and I went down that road too a year ago expecting some arbitrage damage to the gold price for the London boys, and it did not happen. We just have very small 5-8% arbitrage vigs.
Yeah.
It's really turned out to be a nothing burger. So here's what I think the switch is that gets turned on. The Chinese announce two things, and I don't know the phasing in, I don't know the order, I don't know the steps. The two things are, they're going to institute a gold trade note, which is basically a substitute replacement for the treasury bill. The treasury bill is a short-term bill and debt instrument for the U.S. government debt. The Chinese are going to say, instead of using that across all the Eastern nations, including the Eurasian trade zone and the One Belt, One Road, and the emerging market nations, except maybe Brazil, because we'll probably kill their leaders like we've already done with Campos, kill more of them. They're going to go ahead and proceed with the gold trade note and not use the treasury bill. That means if there's a shipment of, say, iron ore from Bolivia, it's going to be questionable whether it hits the Los Angeles port and they accept treasury bills, it's going to be questionable. If there's a container vessel from China going to either New York or to Los Angeles, it will not accept treasury bills. They're going to demand the gold trade note, which is a short-term note backed by gold and not by debt. Okay, so that's the first introduction, the switch that you're referring to change things. I regard it as much a switch as a lit fuse. Okay, the second one is going to be the gold-backed RMB currency and Russian ruble currency. And they're going to come out and say, we've got 50,000 tons of gold together. Mm-hmm. And say to the United States, what do you got?
Yeah, here's ours. Show us yours.
Show us yours. I mean, we used to love when we were little kids with, Shirley next door. Let's do a show and tell. What do you got?
Yeah, right.
Here's mine. What do you got? Okay, that worked for a while. I mean, all I got in a couple of those events was a stolen kiss from Mary Alex McShane. But but that's okay. When China and Russia come out with the gold trade note as a substitute for trade payment, and remember, when oil is no longer universally paid for in dollars, namely treasury bills, and the Chinese RMB win the right to use RMB bonds, they're going to come out and say, we'll use some RMB bonds, but we don't have a lot of liquidity because we don't have the advantage of the United States, which has $20 trillion in debt that they call wealth. You know, we're stuck with a smaller amount of debt, so we're going to securitize them, put them in short-term instruments, allow the Asian countries to replace their treasury bonds in their banking system reserves, and these shorter-term bills in RMB denomination will be used more and more as trade payment. I'm still struggling with my voice.
It's all right.
Trade payment. Now, at the same time, the Russians will say, we're going to be pushing the gold trade note more, and the Chinese will say, we're backing the Russian initiative for that. So this is where, you know, you get some foreign policy statements coming out of the think tanks in Washington, New York, in the United States that say the U.S. has its hands full going after as opponents both Russia and China together. So they try to divide them up and none of the efforts succeed.
Jim, I want to use that as a segue. I'm going to see if I can cobble this together into some coherent kind of topic question, because this is the other topic that I wanted to cover with this call. You know, this is Labor Day. Like I said, Labor Day weekend. It's the end of summer. All traders, you know, the big bank guys are all going to be out on Long Island, you know, doing their coke and chasing chicks all weekend and everything else.
And getting drunk.
When it come back on Tuesday, it's all hands on deck, right? It's like this every year. It's the summer doldrums. You get into August, and you know everybody's trying to squeeze in one last vacation. But once we get into Tuesday, everybody's back, really, around the world. Now, the interesting thing about the timing of all of it this year is that it's now going to be September. The U.S. government's fiscal year ends at the end of September. And so we're going to be greeted come Tuesday and next week with an increasing amount of headlines about, you know, this debt ceiling, you know, and yeah. Anyway, we know how that game is played. But there's going to be all that, the U.S. budget, and everything else that's going on. Now, let me see if I can kind of tie all that back together with what you were just talking about, because there was this visit 2 weeks ago by the Secretary of the Treasury, Mnuchin, out to Fort Knox, to allegedly inspect the gold for like the first time in 40 or 50 years since the Secretary of Treasury has been out there. And he comes out and he says, yes, the gold is safe. Okay. Some theories have been put forth about revaluing the gold again, as they did really after the London gold pool collapsed, and what kind of liquidity that would provide the U.S. government, but also other governments around the world. And again, you're talking, and what I'm trying to tie this all back together is that's essentially what the German or the Chinese and the Russians would do by laying their cards on the table and beginning this trade note. It would essentially force a revaluation. And so now you kind of got this theory of revaluation going on as well. All right. So like I said, I warned you, I didn't know if I could cobble this together into an actual question. So with that as a background for a topic, let's take our remaining time and just have you kind of run with that and see if you can tie it better together than I can.
Tie it together with all we've discussed so far.
Yeah, this idea that the petrodollar is dying, that system is going away, the demand for the dollars is going down, that this new road, new Belt Road, the Eurasian Trade Zone, whatever, is going to supplant or at least provide competition. Yeah, and that provides at least competition for the dollar. The gold trade note, if that happens, is obviously going to provide. It's not going to be gold at $1,200 or $1,300 an ounce. And then you've got the U.S. All of a sudden, the Secretary of the Treasury going out to at least be on the record saying, yep, our 8,000 tons are all there, or at least the 4,000 or so that are in Fort Knox, kind of, you know, planting that seed as a trial balloon to get that actually out there in people's minds. Oh, yes, the Secretary of Treasury was just there, and the gold is there. So therefore, U.S. can compete on this level. I mean, can you kind of see where all that ties together, I guess, is what I'm getting at?
Yeah, okay, let me make some comments about, you know, the Secretary of Treasury, Mnuchin or Mnuchin or whatever the heck. Anyway, I have an assumption, and it needs to be proved or disproved, but I believe Mnuchin made his comments from the front of Fort Knox without ever going inside.
Well, he tried to say he'd been inside, but I guess how do we know?
Well, he might have been inside to an office.
Yeah.
He might have been inside to do a line of coke. Might have been inside to, you know, explain to them what was really going on away from the microphones. He might have been inside in order to tell them what to say or what not to say when in front of the press conference crew. But here's Rob Kirby's theory, and I think it carries a lot of weight. I was informed from Rob Kirby and The Voice back around 2010 and 11 and 12 that the U.S. under the Clinton administration, using Papa Bush and his facilities and assets, exported something on the order of 3,000 to 4,000 phony gold bars that were 95-98% tungsten. And tungsten was selected because it's only $60 a pound as opposed to $1,300 an ounce.
Yeah, and it weighs the same and all that stuff. So yeah. The density is the same.
So the defrauded nations were Hong Kong primarily and Germany. Hong Kong, if you notice, has been the recipient of exported industrial materials in a huge piece of acne in the U.S. government monthly quarterly reports. It looks like the United States has been exporting large tonnage to Hong Kong in some form of compensation. And it's evident in industrial materials and supplies. That's the ledger item. Okay, so as Hong Kong returns their phony gold bars made of tungsten, and we're talking about maybe a couple millimeters of gold surrounding a big block of tungsten.
Right.
And as far as mass spectrometer would conclude that it's very similar to gold.
Based off the density of it, yes.
Density and weight, you know, all, not just density and weight, but you know, in internal alloy characteristics in the lattice work. That's the only way I know how to explain it. So what happened to all those 3,000 or so bars of phony gold? They call them salted gold bars. I prefer to call them tungsten bars. Mm-hmm. What happened to them all? Did the United States government put them somewhere? Did they put them in Fort Knox? So if Mnuchin went in with a couple clowns and handpicked press reporters as eyewitness, did they do thorough acidic testing?
Right.
Or did they do visual testing? Did they pick it up and say, oh, this is impressive and it's very shiny?
Right.
Okay, that's the ignoramus response. Okay, that's what I think is happening. I think they did the Fort Knox tungsten gold display. Okay, but when the boys come back to their offices in Wall Street next week, I think two areas are going to get, maybe wake-up calls. And, you know, you can't say it's going to happen, you know, the first 2 days. I'm thinking it's going to happen in the first 2 weeks with a lot of preparatory events and some strange things happening and some swirling rumors and some little directions that are hinted at. And before you know it, time passes, and I'm not going to put a period of time on it. Time passes, and the crude oil and gold markets respond. Crude oil, in order to make the point to Washington and New York that the petrodollar is dead. One excellent way to do that is to make sure it's nowhere near $50, $55 a barrel. In counter to the Fort Knox charade, now remember, Mnuchin was involved, had a career in Hollywood productions. I mean, you look whether it's Jurassic Park or, gosh, there was a movie just last night that I saw on TV, and I cannot remember the name because I use it to fall asleep by with a timer. It was Tarzan. Tarzan was involved. I mean, the production of Tarzan also had, I mean, the Transformers, that also had Mnuchin. This guy's a production expert. So he had a really shitty production of claiming in front of Fort Knox that the gold is still there. So we might see coming up very soon a response in the gold market with oil to destroy the petrodollar foundation and structure that is really in its last stage. If you want to put nine innings on the petrodollar, I'd say we're in inning 8 and 9, maybe the end of the eighth. For gold, it's a different story. I mentioned the two switches, triggers I call them, in the gold trade note and the gold-backed RMB and ruble. Those could be hinted at in Chinese press. And notice in the last 3 years, we have a lot of new entries in the global press network syndicated system. There's more Russia Today. There's more Pravda in English. There's more Press TV out of Iran. There's more South China Morning Post.
Yep.
There's more, oh gosh, what's the...
Asia Times one, or whatever. I mean, there's all, yeah, there's all kinds of places like that.
Oh, Xinhua. Xinhua Network out of China. But, I mean, they're becoming so popular that they're getting acronyms like the South China Morning Post. It's the SCMP now. Okay. So they're, I think you're going to see those press platforms, syndicated columns, being you, and there's also the BRICS Post. That's another one. They're going to use them. I'm talking about Russia, China, Eurasian Trade Zone masters, designers. They're going to use those platforms to let it be known that gold is changing and the new vehicles are coming. One of the later vehicles, I really think it's going to be the gold-backed RMB. It's much more important to have a gold vehicle for trade payment than it is to have a gold-backed currency. Because if you're looking to displace and depose the dollar, the best way to do it is with the trade payments and the treasury bills. Get rid of the treasury bills and say you got to go to the gold trade note, which is a short-term bill backed by gold, equity put forth, and all settled on a net bilateral basis on a quarterly standard. Okay, that knocks dead the dollar from trade.
Right.
Now, here's the part that most Americans just don't think about. If trade payments are done in no longer in treasury bills, but more so in gold trade notes and other instruments, like even RMB cash, RMB bonds, to some extent, like with the Saudis. It means that the countries are going to be holding less in treasury bonds in their banking systems.
In dollars, yep.
In dollars. So you're going to see countries like Korea say, we want to buy Persian Gulf oil too. We've got a big contract with UAE and Kuwait. We'd like to use the gold trade note, but we also like to use RMB because we're switching out of our treasury bonds in our banking system, and we're holding a lot more RMB. And we use the short-term RMB bills to pay for oil. So it's going to be short-term RMB government, not bonds, but bills. This means short-term, like 2 years or less, in addition to the gold trade note. The gold trade note is going to be fascinating because nations of the world are going to say, well, we've got this much trade in gold trade notes, and you've got this much, and let's let a couple months pass. All right, now let's just clear this balance. We're net much smaller now because we each have good size. So let's settle this in gold on a net basis, like Bolivia and China. Bolivia with industrial metals, China with finished goods. I don't know the exact figures, but if they both net out, it might not be a lot of gold changing hands, and that's what they want.
Right.
More balanced trade. And one of the objectives of the Eurasian Trade Zone is no deadbeat nations. The reset has an objective. Build up your industry. Build up whatever you need to do to get a bigger balance and to remove your trade deficit. And the United States has the worst.
Right.
$550 billion last year. I bet it's going to be closer to $600 billion this year in the trade deficit.
So, wow. Jim, do you think the U.S. has an interest, as some have speculated, in the West, really, for that matter, because it would benefit the ECB as well. They allegedly have a big stockpile of gold. I mean, does the U.S. have an interest in seeing the value, the stated value of gold get revalued higher?
No, I think the Bush crime family does.
But from a balance of payments, from a...
No, the U.S. government has dumped it.
Yeah, well, yeah.
They've spent their gold on you know, space fleets that go, you know, the crafts go a million miles an hour or more. I mean, the whole next generation space fleet is paid with stolen gold and narcotics. Well, the U.S. government doesn't have a big store of gold.
Right. Which, again, was all part of Mnuchin going there and saying, yep, it's safe.
That was a charade.
But, Jim, as you were...
The biggest amounts of gold that we have are in unmined Nevada gold deposits and in the Grand Canyon.
Jim, let me ask you this, because you were mentioning, this got me thinking about this. You know, every time you and I have talked about North Korea in the last 5 years, you always laugh at me and you're like, man, it don't fall for that bullshit. And you've been right every single time. And now I'm sitting here thinking, why all of a sudden is this, and I've talked about this at TFMR. I mean, if we're worried about North Korea and proliferation of nuclear weapons and we getting those weapons falling in the hands of, you know, who we call terrorists. Hell, we should be attacking Pakistan before North Korea. But yet here they are doing all this posturing. I mean, could it be all of this is being done, you know, just as the threat? You mentioned South Korea, but it's the threat to the entire region. Look, you keep playing ball with the dollar. Don't even think about joining this Chinese, Russian, you know, new consortium that's coming out there. You better keep playing ball or we will drop a bomb on Pyongyang. And that's going to, and who knows what they're going to do to retaliate. And that's going to ruin your region for years. I mean, could that be? I mean, I hadn't thought of that before until
you
mentioned it.
Yeah, it could be. But let's start with the definition of terrorism. Okay, Saddam sold oil and received euros.
Yeah, right.
He was called a terrorist.
Right.
Okay, what was the terror?
Right. And Gaddafi's the same way.
Gaddafi wanted a gold-backed, dinar. for North African oil sales payments.
Yep.
He was declared a terrorist. So where was the terror?
How about Assad? You want to throw him on the pile too? Might as well.
The Israelis proceed to drop chemical weapons in Syria, and therefore Assad is a terrorist.
And he wants to help build a pipeline that can circumvent Saudi Arabia.
Assad wants to cooperate with the Iranian gas pipeline, so he's a terrorist. Where's the terror?
Yep.
The terror is in Tel Aviv. And Saddam did have chemical weapons, and they all had U.S. markings.
Right.
Sold by Papa Bush.
That's what I've heard,
too. So where's the terror? The terror is in the United States and in Israel. That's where the terror is.
In England, and everybody enforcing this system.
So my point is that whenever a nation opposes the dollar and its system of trade and banking, they're branded as terrorists.
Right.
Iran sold oil to China in the form of barter systems, and therefore they were declared terrorists. Where was the terror?
And
okay, so it's pretty simple. The pattern is very simple to anyone with more than a 90 IQ, which I believe eliminates 2/3 of the U.S. population. So there's still 200 million dumbasses out there who buy the terrorist argument. Now, here's what I think is going on with North Korea. The United States is running low on cash. Mm-hmm. They're actually using a little bit of narcotics money to fund the U.S. military. Therefore, Trump has come out. Before we used to have the teleprompter president with Obama. Now we have a basic puppet with the Pentagon shoving its arm straight up Trump's ass and operating his mouthpiece. We're going to expand our troop involvement in Afghanistan. And the reason I believe is that, by the way, we've had a 30% increase in heroin production in just the last year of Afghanistan.
Look at the heroin addiction.
I believe it's to fund. Well, it's not just to help Big Pharma in the United States and to fill the 850 million prescriptions in Ohio just last year for opioids, like, you know, painkillers, Percocet. Darva. I'm not real good on the name because I've never done them.
Right.
Anyway, so here's what I think is going on with Korea. And let's put aside Afghanistan for now because I covered it a little bit. North Korea is a major heroin production center. Is that ever in the news?
No, actually. That's news to me.
Okay. What U.S. entity with U.S. government coverage wants to take it?
A clandestine outfit, maybe?
The clandestine Bush crime family with the Langley protection. They want that North Korean heroin. But in the news, you do see occasionally stories about how North Korea, which has been, you know, dormant for the last two generations, has at least $6 trillion in untapped mineral reserves, deposits.
Right, right.
So we want the West, namely the United States, because, you know, we're the beacon of freedom and liberty right now. It's the liberty to kill you, the liberty to steal your stuff. We want the heroin and mineral resources in Korea. By the way, back to Afghanistan for a minute. A few months ago, I had a photograph, and it had different colored triangles and squares and circles. The two that attracted most of my attention were copper and gold. Afghanistan is loaded with copper and gold.
I bet they are, yeah.
We're developing the heroin there from the poppy.
That's easier.
And I have a couple of military contacts, and I asked them both, what nonsense do the grunt soldiers walking through the fields of poppy, what nonsense are they told by their military superiors as for the purpose of protecting the heroin? And I was aghast and shocked at what I heard Same response from the same two from the two different people. We tell the soldiers that we're guarding the heroin production because we shove it into Russia and China and Iran to ruin their countries.
Opium wars.
Well, that's nonsense. It goes to Big Pharma.
Right.
And into the United States for the street heroin use and for the prescription opioid use.
But they're saying that, that's why.
Abuse.
Yeah, but they're saying that's okay, why, that's just fine. Like the opium wars in the past.
Yeah, like opium. It's a different kind of opium war, but it's a war against the United States citizenry.
Oh, boy.
Okay, so that's what's going on with North Korea. Now, you made a point that, yeah, okay, if it gets out of hand, we're going to have to nuke Pyongyang, and that'll affect all South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And South Korea, you've been making some rumblings about joining the Eurasian Trade Zone and getting involved in LNG facilities with the Russian gas and using, just getting integrated a bit more in the One Belt, One Road projects and having your contractors bid. Okay, so that's all rumblings and saber rattlings. I think to freeze South Korea, they're captive.
Yeah.
They're a vassal state. But just like Japan is shedding their vassal state status, I think South Korea will also. Don't know how exactly. They need to get rid of the U.S.-based NGO groups. Those are the little infiltration of supposedly nonprofit organization to do good and what they end up doing is stir up trouble, right, in a general sense.
Well, Jim, the old adage is you always got to leave them wanting more. And unfortunately, our time always goes so fast. And I know I told you that.
Well, that's what I tell the Latinas here.
That's right. Got to leave them wanting more. Well, and again, I have a hard cutoff time because I've got a skedaddle. And this was our one chance to record this, and so I've got to stop here. But we will leave them wanting more. We'll hopefully do this again soon. But I do want to emphasize once again, if you're immediately left wanting more, you need to go to goldenjackass.com, and you need to subscribe to the Hat Trick Letter. Jim, in our final remaining couple of minutes, tell everybody how they do that.
It's www.goldenjackass.com. No hyphens, no nothing in there. My mother called me my little jackass when I was stealing cookie dough or a piece of fruit or whatever. I was a little devil. So I was a jackass. So when I started writing about gold, I'm the golden jackass. And I liked it. It stuck. And now it's just the name of the website. We got 13 and a half years here, Craig. It's amazing. I just finished the number 161 monthly report. 13 and a half years. This has been a labor of love. It's been exciting. It's been exhausting. I'm getting better in the last two or three years dealing with exhaustion, dealing with, recharging my jets. I just get away for two or three days. I watch sports. I go to the movies. I'm curious today what the new movies are coming out, because the new Catalero, the billboard of the new movie, it comes out every Thursday. So last week it was great. They had the new movie on the Stephen King Towers movie, and Atomic Blonde with Charlize. Outstanding. Talk about a female Bourne. Oh, my gosh. Jason Bourne with the blonde wig. Oh, my. It's very well done. So that's I recharge my jets. I'm doing better with it. I'm still overcoming a little bit of bronchial tube damage. They're dry. They're not stretchy. Anyway, it's coming back. My voice is back. I noticed I didn't cough. I did not cough once during this hour.
No, you're right. You're right.
And I did not snort once either.
No.
Just to relieve some of the nasal buildup from talking in an hour. People give me a nasty email. I tell you people, you can go to hell. A nasty email, Jim, why are you snorting so much? It sounds like you're on coke. Because you're an idiot.
Yeah.
You don't understand.
Yeah.
Coming off a bronchial tube infection. Wake up, you idiot. You can go to hell.
Jim, I want to bring you back on point for a second. You have two reports, correct?
Yeah.
All right. What
and
are they?
Those who don't go to hell, they can sign up for the newsletter. It's the Hat Trick Letter. By the way, I'm drug-free for 30 years. I don't even drink.
Right, I know you don't.
Okay, I just had my 30th anniversary in April of no drugs, no nothing. Okay, so the Hattrick letter consists of two reports. It's the Money War, Global Money War Report and the Golden Currency Report. I've even included in the last report, I included a good solid section introducing the cryptocurrencies and blockchain. I'm developing some gradually firming opinions about both cryptocurrencies and the blockchain contract format. Blockchain is a data structure. Cryptocurrency is a form of currency that's a little bit mysterious. I'm expecting in the next few months the launch outside the Arab world. I don't give a crap about the Dubai-based Bitgram or whatever it's called. I don't trust UAE or Dubai for nothing. We're going to see precious metals backed cryptocurrencies. And I think it's going to do quite a bit of damage to the Bitcoin price, which I think Wall Street is allowing to run.
Interesting thought. You had mentioned that. I want to give you credit because several people on my site took you up on it. Had never heard of Ant shares before you mentioned them in July, and they've done pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah, they've done pretty well. They're under the Chinese auspices. They're not an American. They're not a Western entity. There are going to be a few that do well. I think Ethereum is going to do very well. anyway, the blockchain is the structure of contract. And, you know, if we had back in 05, instead of the Mortgage Electronic Registry System, MERS, for the database linking titles of SecureStream mortgage income with the bonds, you know, the asset-backed bond, the mortgage bonds, if we had a blockchain back then, we never would have had the subprime bond disaster.
And the fraud, yeah.
Yeah, we had $2 to $3 trillion worth of fraud and a minimal amount of prosecution, and not one Wall Street executive went to prison for multi-trillion dollar fraud. Okay, blockchain might put a big threat on the financial services sector of Wall Street, and I'm looking forward to seeing the damage.
Yeah.
Because we're going to have an honest system. But I am worried, Craig, and I'll just mention this as a final aside. The quantum computers, they're here. They're powerful. They're not common. So they're in the elite homes, the elite arenas. I guarantee you Langley has one. And they're being used to hack the wallets.
Yeah.
The Bitcoin has a very puny 256-bit encryption. Now, I learned 10 years ago, 1,024-bit is where the name of the game is. So why does Bitcoin have a factor of four smaller? You got to square things to get an idea of the impact on protection.
Right.
So think of it as 16 times less the secure power of the 1044-bit encryption. Oh my gosh. Who designed that? Okay, so I don't like Bitcoin. I like the cryptocurrency concept, and I'm going to like it even more when it develops the hard asset core, which brings about numerous new questions. If it truly is decentralized, where's the gold going to be kept?
Yeah.
And I have an answer to that. It's in the August Hattrick letter. It's going to be something like regional repositories. Depositories.
Suppositories?
Regional. Suppository. No, I'm sorry. to relieve the world of their constipation.
Yes, and their painful itch.
Ah, yeah. Okay. And all those hemorrhoids that have a dollar tattoo on them.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think we're going to have a lot of new issues come up with legitimate gold-backed cryptocurrencies like custodians, like regional depository. Think of, for instance, Russia and the former Soviet republics using either the Kremlin or Astana, capital of Kazakhstan, as a gold repository for their own trade. Okay, they don't have to worry about Basel for that. It doesn't have to be, you know, a one-world gold government. I'm hoping that Basel tries an overreach and is slammed. I think they're going to try to do something like a gold-backed SDR bond. Hmm. And they're going to get slammed. Because countries around the world don't trust Basel, don't trust the Western Central Bank franchise system governed by Basel.
Well,
so, interesting times. And, you know, it's amazing. Every 2 or 3 months when we get on, Craig, there's no shortage.
That's for sure. That's what I was about to say. We'll see how much of that has come to pass by the time we speak again. It's been remarkable. That's what's so beneficial about doing these regular updates with you, Jim, because everything changes so quickly. And again, you've clearly shown that you can you adapt, and you've got your hands all over everything, and you're keeping your eyes on everything too. And it just, the value that you have at your newsletter is tremendous. And I want everybody to check it out. And at this point, Jim, I want to wish you a happy beginning of football season, and in a glorious fall. And then we'll get back together soon, and we'll talk about things some more.
Okay, I'm rooting for Florida State, by the way. I don't think they have a chance, but I don't like Alabama. And little known fact, I turned down a graduate school fellowship, a free ride at Florida State. For statistics,
kind of makes you a little bit, have you some connection there. So,
well, I went down there to visit, and I was impressed with Tallahassee. I thought it was a nice place, but I came to a conclusion, Craig, a very unusual conclusion. If I go to Florida State, I will never finish my doctorate because there are too many pretty girls, and I can play tennis in February.
You were wise beyond your years at that point, my friend.
Oh, I went to Carnegie Mellon and I suffered the cold winters.
That's right.
And I got myself a doctorate.
But you got it done. Well, all right. Enjoy your weekend, Jim. And please keep your eyes and ears to the ground and paying attention there. And we'll talk again soon.
Okay. Thanks for having me on. Bye now.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Have a great holiday weekend. But be ready for just about anything once the calendar flips to September.